My name is Mike Starr of Blazing Star Barbecue, and you are listening to the Leonard and Jeff on the Baseball Barbecue Podcast. Please tune in for all their great topics. Promise you, you won't regret it. Oh, yeah.
Thank you for joining us for our baby New Year episode as we bid adieu to 2023 and say hello to 2024, and we say hello to you. I say hello to Jeff Cohen, my illustrious co-host on this 218th episode of Baseball and Barbecue. Hello, Jeff. Happy New Year.
Hello, Hollywood, and Happy New Year to you.
I did not call you an old coot, you know, although some may say you're the new year on your way out.
Well, you know what? Greg Rempe called me the old coot, and it stuck, so I might as well stick with it.
It's a compliment. It is our New Year's episode, episode 218. I'm going to tell you one of our guests, maybe Jeff will tell you the other. The first guest is going to be author Dale Perlman, who has written a book on Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, for those of you old enough like me and Jeff to remember Chuck Tanner, you know, he was a gift to baseball. He really was. You didn't think of the game without thinking of Chuck Tanner. He spent his life in the game, and Dale Perlman actually lives in the same town which Chuck Tanner lived in his whole life, basically. Loved that town. Dale Perlman lives in that town, wrote this book. It's great. It really
Chuck
is.
Chuck Tanner might have been the most upbeat manager who has ever put on a big league uniform.
Yeah.
Such a vision of positivity.
Could not agree more. And Jeff, who is guest number two?
That would be Raymond Blazik of It's BBQ Ray Barbecue.
Nice.
And we
speak to Ray. I think he's an up and comer in the barbecue industry.
He is, yes. And follow him on Twitter at It's BBQ Ray. And his website is called itsbbqray.com, and it's pretty good. So check him out.
All right. So we're going to get to that in one moment. I just want to tell everybody, the only people that don't get time off this time of year are pro athletes. And, of course, us at Bet Online. With NFL bowl season and NBA in full swing over the holidays, Bet Online isn't taking a second off to make sure you have all the up to the second odds news and information. BetOnline has all the sports wagering information available you need with both desktop and mobile access. Head there today to get into the action. Remember to use your promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50%, yes, 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, it is where the game starts. And you know what, Jeff? There is one thing that I said in the ad, the first line, only people that don't get time off this time of year are pro athletes. I don't know what the baseball guys are doing. Maybe they're in the gym, but they're not playing. And I'm going to...
They ain't playing.
And you know what? You know, when Dale Perlman, who's going to tell us all about Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates, because that's the name of his book, when it's over, yours truly, Hollywood, is going to attempt a rant.
Ooh, how about that? Well, we better get to Dale Perlman, and a book about Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. We Are Family was the mantra of the 1979 Pittsburgh Pirates, led by Hall of Famer Willie Stargell and a team of fantastic players including Bill Madlock, Dave Parker, Manny Sanguian, and pitchers Burt Blyleven, John Candelaria, Bruce Keeson, and Kent DeCulvey. But who was the man in charge in the dugout? It was the always upbeat Chuck Tanner. Dale Perlman has written a fantastic book into the life of baseball's Mr. Sunshine. The name of the book is Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates, and we are thrilled to have Dale Perlman talk with us about it. Welcome to Baseball and BBQ, Dale.
Welcome, Dale.
Well, thank you.
Dale, what was the reason why you wanted to write a book about Chuck Tanner?
Well, I'm a Newcastle guy to start, and Chuck Tanner was a Newcastle guy. And I knew Chuck, not well, but I knew him. He was on the board of a local bank with my father, and I saw him at the YMCA frequently, and we would talk, meet in the sauna room. He loved to take saunas, and everyone in town had wonderful things to say about him. He was what I'd call a for real guy.
Right.
So let's get down to business, all right? Dale, first of all, great book. If you don't know about Chuck Tanner, you read this, you're going to. His nickname was Mr. Sunshine. Dale, you wrote two books on serial killers. What a switch. Two books on serial killers, and then you write about Chuck Tanner. That must have been an interesting change.
Well, my wife said, you know, enough of this. The one book on the Kadunse murders, they're going to be making a podcast and a documentary out of, which is very interesting. The other book on the Cecil, I mean, it's just deadly. And my wife said, enough of this. Let's do something positive. And I couldn't think of a more positive subject than Chuck Tanner.
So tell us about his early years. The first chapter is called The Early Years. So talk about him growing up in where you're from, Newcastle.
Well, in 1928, when he was born on the 4th of July, his family did not have a lot of money. And Chuck had a great sense of humor. When people asked him, boy, you must have felt very sorry living in the circumstances you lived in. His answer was, you know, we didn't have electricity and we didn't have indoor plumbing, but we were much luckier than most. We had a two-holer out back. Most folks only had a one. And that's Mr. Sunshine looking at the bright side.
He was a great athlete in school growing up, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. As a kid, he was able to play as a 12-year-old, an 11-year-old. He played with the 13 and 14-year-olds, and he could keep up with them. In high school, we went to a place called Shenango High School. He won the state for the Class B championship for either the discus or the shot put. And in the other, he received a silver medal. He was a star of the football team, the basketball team, and the track team. However, Shenango did not have a baseball team, which is very funny. I mentioned that in the book. Mm-hmm. But he played all summer in, you know, the various like pony leagues and was an exceptional player.
And he knew he was going to be a player, a ball player. I mean, that was his goal. He write about it quite eloquently in the book. And he toiled in the minor leagues for, what was it, time. 7 years?
Closer to eight.
Okay.
And he was better than a 300 hitter in the minor leagues. And eventually he played for a team called the Atlanta Crackers. And he was really an all-star with them. And he kept wondering, will I ever get called up? And he had a problem. The problem was this. The outfield had somebody, I think his name is Hank Aaron. And I think he was a decent ball player.
He was okay.
And then they had Bill Bruton, who led the major leagues in steals a couple years. And another all-star called Bobby Thompson.
I might have heard of him.
Yeah.
And I think he hit a famous home run once.
Something about a shot heard around the world. Yeah. So, you know,
here's Chuck. And they also had outfielder. And he thought he just was not going to get up there, thinking about quitting. But his wife said, don't quit. And he said, I really wasn't.
Let's talk about his wife for a second. So it was Barbara, as he called her, Babs. And you talk about supportive. I mean, Jeff and I think we have supportive wives who put up with us with this podcast. You know, there's a lot involved, time away, you know, road trips, evenings. This was a woman who really...
She raised four.
Yeah, she was the back of that family.
Yeah, she raised four children.
Yeah.
He wasn't around that much.
Right.
And she was an amazing woman, And everyone in Newcastle knew and loved her. I did not know her, but her son, Bruce, who also played some major league ball, won one game for Chicago. He said he couldn't have been prouder of his father in later years, because in later years, Chuck took good care of Babs when her health failed. But all through his youth, his mother was the disciplinarian. His mother was the one who took them to school and took care of them. And I mean, she was an amazing woman. Amazing.
Chuck, he toiled around in the minor leagues, as you said, for a while. Finally gets called up in 1955 with the Milwaukee Braves. And on his very first, he pinched hit for Warren Spahn. And on his very first pitch, his very first game, he hits one out. And that's the seventh time it ever happened, but first time in Milwaukee Braves history.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And I listened to a local guy that he was with, Bruce's second son, in the kitchen, listening to the game. And they couldn't believe it. Actually, I met Chuck's grandson. His name's Matt, and it's spelled with a single T, which everyone who reads a book probably thinks I had a misprint, but his name's M-A-T, not M-A-T-T. Mm-hmm. Has a record of that particular hit where they say, this is something Chuck can tell his grandchildren. And amazing. By the way, the second at bat, he got a hit too.
Yes.
Not a home run, but he hit a single. And that was Warren Spahn, if I'm not mistaken, 199th victory. He was losing the game.
I was going to bring that up. Yes, he was losing the game, and he took his home run.
2-1. Uh-huh. And Jerry Staley, who was a pretty darn good pitcher, was pitching to him and was ahead 2-1. When Chuck hit the tying home run, and then I think the Braves scored two more runs to win 4-2, and Warren Spahn got the win. Warren Spahn hit a lot more home runs at the major leaguer than Chuck.
Yes, I know that. Yeah.
That was an interesting stat. Very nice tidbit. By the way, a picture of that that record, phonograph record, or whatever you want to call it, LP, you have in the book.
And correct.
So, yeah. And the book has some really nice pictures throughout. It's not a picture book by any means, but there are some nice pictures in the book, and very interesting.
I think it has something like 60 pictures, even though it's not a picture book. Some of them are quite small. But
Yeah. There's a picture of Tommy Lasorda with Chuck Tanner, but that, of course, that's later. You know what was amazing? In the book, of course, we're referring to the book, which is Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. And we are speaking to the author, Dale Perlman. He had the opportunity to play another year in pro baseball, you know, in the majors. He was offered $18,000 to do that. But his other option was to take $6,000 and go manage in the minor leagues, even though $18,000 is more. He took the $6,000 because he thought that his career path would be better going as a manager. So that was that he was smart to do that. That was definitely the right thing to do.
Absolutely. His last 3 years of his career, I don't think, maybe I do mention it in the book. He had a 3-year contract for $1 million a year as a manager.
Yeah, you do have that in the book, yes.
Yeah, and as a major leaguer, I don't think he ever earned much over $18,000, $20,000 a year,
right.
Even in his peak years.
Yeah, but what I found very interesting was when the going along again with his upbeat attitude, when he finished his major league career, all he could talk about was not his accomplishments, but was all the great things that he had witnessed of others' accomplishments while he played. Just showed the kind of man that he was. He really did respect and appreciate what other people did.
Now, I just want to let everybody know that Chuck did play for 4 major league teams, the Milwaukee Braves, the Chicago Cubs, the Cleveland Indians, and the Los Angeles Angels, as they were known back then. But then he goes into the minor leagues and starts managing. Could you talk about that?
Well, funny thing is, the first time when he managed, the very first time, he said he wasn't patient. He was upset. He was doing the Class D. And then he started to remember, you know, I was 18 years old. And most of the kids in the D are 18, 19 years old. He said, and I wasn't perfect. And they feel bad enough if they make a mistake. I don't have to yell at them. I don't have to watch who's coming in late. These are adults and they should do it on their own. And he was extremely supportive of his minor league players. And even now I'm getting notes. I remember when Chuck managed and they talk about the different places where he managed. And 1 year he became a manager of the year as a minor league manager. It's very funny. He was a minor league manager of the year. He was a major league manager of the year. And he was a World Series manager, winning manager, which is quite a career.
Yeah.
But he is a minor league manager. It's more important that he gets people to move up a notch and into the major leagues rather than just winning and losing. Mm-hmm. And there were a ton of us who owed their careers to Chuck's positivity and his management skills.
Yeah. Well, in the minor league, did I read this right? That's where he met Roland Hammond, who became a very important contact for him.
Oh, my, yes. I have a friend here who's a minor leaguer, an ex-minor leaguer, and he says, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. And Roland brought Chuck up, and the two of them with the White Sox changed a team that was the worst team in baseball in the year 1970. By the time 72 came up, Chuck had added Dick Allen, which is also a great story. And there's a guy that most of us in Western Pennsylvania think should be in the Hall of Fame. He was difficult to manage, and Chuck found a way harnessing his energy and leading that team to a second place finish in 1972. And it was Roland Hammond that year was named Baseball Executive the year. Dick Allen was named Most Valuable Player of the Year, and Chuck Tanner won Manager of the Year. What a coup for that group.
And tell us about his relationship with Dick Allen's brother, Harold, who they called Hank. Now, did he do something special for him?
He did. And Hank was difficult to get hold of. Bruce Tanner lined me up with Hank. Hank is very reticent to talk to anybody. But Hank was just hanging in. He needed probably no more than 40 or 50 games to get his pension. And Chuck wanted to make sure that Hank got his pension. And you know the story, the backstory is Chuck just hung in long enough to get his back pension through the courtesy of several people that he knew. Well, Hank was hanging on in the final position on the team. And do we keep Hank or do we bring a younger guy in? What do we do? And Hank went to see Chuck and said, Chuck, you don't have to keep me. I understand baseball's a business. And Hank, he said, you just get out there and try your best and play all you can, because I make the decisions who I keep. You don't make them. I do. Hank had a pretty good spring training and they kept him. And also Dick Allen, Hank's brother, came and said, you know, you don't have to keep my brother Hank. Mm-hmm. And Chuck said to Dick, who was the star of the team, you just go out and play hard. He said, because I want to make sure you make the team this year. and he laughed.
Yes.
You know, Dale, I'm going to make a confession. That seems to be what I do on this show. Sometimes I confess. Jeff never confesses, but I confession is good for the soul. Dick Allen, not that I know every Hall of Famer, but when I saw Dick Allen, I thought right away, he's in the Hall of Fame. And he should be. He should be in the Hall of Fame. I agree. If you look at Dick Allen's numbers, and I know we're talking about Chuck Tanner, you did bring it up. He has Hall of Fame stats. There's no doubt. That and he's come very close with the Veterans Committee. So
he will get in. I do.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2020.
Yes, and he did.
So it'll be posthumously. And I just hate when the players don't get to experience that honor firsthand. But anyway.
And he could have played pro basketball in high school. The Wampum team won the state championship, and they had, over the years, there were five Allen brothers. Two were half brothers, but there were five Allen brothers, and all of them were outstanding basketball players. And then they had a guy named Don Henin, who was an All-American for Pitt, and he could have played pro basketball. And the other thing about Dick Allen, I'll give you another aside. Did you know that he had a rock and roll group called Dick Allen and the Ebonics? And he has an amazing singing voice. Mm. And maybe when you're free, you can hear it online. I think it's called November, the song. He said, you can boo me. You can boo me all you want. I get booed in Philadelphia. That's where he sang. And everyone booed him in the audience. And then he sang and the crowd went crazy. They thought he was terrific.
Wow. So Chuck Tanner, he ends up managing 6 years in Chicago. Thanks to, we talked about Roland Helmond. He got him a job to finally manage the White Sox for 6 years. And you said he did pretty well there. I mean, he had a 492 winning percentage. Okay, just under 500. But the Chicago White Sox wasn't a powerhouse team.
He improved them.
Yes.
I mean, he came in, I think he was 3-12 the first year. I don't remember the exact, might have been 3-13.
It was 3-13, yeah.
And that team had the worst record in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you start like that and then you pull them up to where he did a fantastic job.
Yeah. And then Bill Veeck fires the Chicago White Sox, and they make changes at the manager's position, but he's not out of work very long because he goes out to Oakland and the famous Charles Finley.
Yeah, he that was a trip with Charles Finley. I guess he was very difficult to work for. Al Dark and he didn't see eye to eye. And Al Dark had a very good record with him and couldn't stand him. And actually, Chuck, I don't know about him as a person, but him as a boss, he couldn't stand him as a boss. He interfered with everything. I know one time Chuck, an order came down to make a managerial decision on the field. And Chuck said, why don't you come down and make it? And I'm leaving. And he didn't do that, but Chuck had a terrible time with him.
Dale, one thing, I got to go back just a moment, because as I was reading the book, this made me laugh. I'm going to just take a little, this is just one of the tidbits that you guys will find in this book and why it's just such an enjoyable book. When he first becomes manager of the White Sox, and he's going to manage them for 16 games to end the season.
Oh, yeah.
And says, always the gentleman, Chuck visited with former manager Don Guttridge before he left. He asked the departing manager if he could give him any tips. Not really. I just left you three numbered envelopes in the top drawer of the desk in the manager's office. When the team is in a slump and you don't know what to do, open the first envelope. If that doesn't work, open the second. If nothing changes, fetch the third. During the next few days, losses mounted. Tanner went to the desk and pulled out the envelope number one. Inside it read, blame it on your predecessor. At the afternoon press conference, Chuck did just that. There were more losses, okay. And so he opens envelope two. And this one read, make a new lineup. So Chuck did as instructed. And then goes on, and they kept losing. So he goes to the third envelope, and the note inside read, prepare three envelopes.
I thought that was hilarious.
I mean, that's just, Jeff, I had to go back to that because, I mean, that's just one little funny thing in this book of many, many, many great things.
Yeah, that was very funny.
Yes. So I just want to go back just to Oakland, where he did very well. I mean, he was 84, 87, 74, and he came in second place. But of course, Chuck Finley being Chuck Finley, wasn't satisfied. And he gets traded.
Well,
Chuck Tanner gets traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
And it was the luckiest thing that could have ever happened. That was only the second time something like that happened. A manager traded for another player and cash. He was traded for $100,000 and Manny Sanguia, who will come back to the Pirates later. Gil Hodges had another situation like that. Chuck did not have a lot of confidence that trade was going to work. Originally, Finley wanted $200,000 plus Manny Sanguia, but they compromised at $100,000, and Finley said, hey, anytime I can get $100,000 for a manager and a player where I could get another couple hundred thousand down the road, yeah. I made a good deal. But yeah. Chuck was really lucky, because I do tell the story what happened to Oakland. He really disassembled the entire team. He sold off all of his players. I think he sold off something like 12 players, and the team became a disaster. Chuck was so lucky to get out of there, because the next year he would have had a losing record for sure with Oakland.
Yeah, absolutely. He goes on to manage the Pittsburgh Pirates for 9 seasons, obviously his best managing job, being close to home. 1979 being that famous team, We Are Family. But I'd like you to tell a story about the $250 hot dog.
Oh, that's John Candelaria. You know, talking to some of these old Steelers was a hoot. But that particular story was typical John Candelaria. John had pitched the night before, and they were in San Francisco. And usually they had a snack in the clubhouse so that the players could get a bite to eat. Well, since he had an interview, he missed the snack, and he had to head directly to the dugout. And Chuck had a hard and fast rule: no eating in the dugout. Well, John was very hungry. Candy, they called him, was very hungry. So he spots this kid, says, hey, kid, come here. How would you like an autographed baseball? Kid said, sure. Said, here's $5. Go get me a hot dog. Get some mustard on it. Bring it back. Hurry up, though, because Chuck was not in the dugout yet. The kid races, gets the hot dog, comes down, and who does he run into about to enter the dugout? but Chuck Tanner. And he says, "Hey, number 7, would you tell number 45 I have his hot dog?" And Chuck looks down and sees John Candelaria, and he says, "Hey, Candy, here's your $250 hot dog." Chuck Candelaria reaches around, grabs the hot dog, begins chomping down on it. And Tanner says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm eating my $250 hot dog." And he did. But the fine stuck, by the way. Candelaria said he did pay the fine.
Ah. He had a great managing style. He knew, he was a player's manager, where he knew how to handle each player. One needs to be yelled at, and one needs to be coddled. So he, yes, his managing style was very, very different for all different players.
By the way, Chuck Tanner had great physical strength. Everyone who knew him said they recognized two things about him: his positivity and his firm handshake. And he could be a little bit difficult on his players when they demanded it.
He has a great year in 77, an even better year in 78 and 79. We are family. You know, Dale, I was going to ask you to sing with me, but I don't know if you're here or not. But I certainly, we are family.
I even have the whole song in the book.
Yeah, the lyrics.
You do. Actually, so, page 123 and 124, the whole song, the whole thing. Willie Stargell is actually who discovered the song.
Yes,
Willie Stargell pops. Because they had another, Dave Parker had suggested a song, Ain't No Stopping Us Now.
Which would have been a good song, but not as good as We Are Family.
No, We Are Family is just, it's lived in infamy. I mean, that team,
it really is.
That song, great song, great year, 1979. They win it all. Now, you are from Pittsburgh.
Well, Newcastle.
Okay, right, Newcastle, Pennsylvania, I'm sorry. Tell us in 1979 what it was like when the Pirates win it all.
Oh, first of all, there were all kinds of pennants and pictures, and they had a terrific parade. Luckily, I swim with a fellow who said, "You know, I think I have two pictures from that parade," and they were like old Polaroids. But they looked pretty good, and I put them in the book. They had something thousands. I think there were something like 25, 30,000 people who came to that parade in Newcastle. I don't remember the exact figure, but it was a parade like no other parade in Newcastle. Now, Pittsburgh had their own celebration, but Newcastle was a town at that time, maybe 50,000 people, and I would say over half of them were at that parade. Stores shut down. It was just pandemonium and excitement. But there was some sadness at that time, too, that I talk about in the book.
Yes. Yeah. Why don't you tell us? That's very sad.
Well, the Pirates were down 3-1. Things looked very grim. Chuck's mother was in the hospital. The week before, she was strong enough that she was able to see Terry Bradshaw pull off a victory. And she would scream, "Get him, Bradshaw!" But the next week, she had been in very ill health. She passed away. And Willie Stargell came to see Chuck and said, "You know, Chuck, if you don't think you can handle it this time, if you want to stay with your family, I can manage the team." And he was like Chuck's right-hand man. And he had two coaches who had been with him for years, one of them, Lynette. And, I mean, there were people who probably could have helped out. But Chuck said, "No, my mother, this is what she would want me to do. She would want me to stay and managed this to fruition. The team got really hyped when they learned that their manager was going to stick with them. And Phil Garner said, "We got them just where we want them, down 3-1. Then what happened is the mayor of Baltimore started to plan a parade, a victory parade, because, and the bookies were giving 90 to 1 or 50 to 1 odds, some amazing odds, because they knew people like Palmer would be pitching. And I mean, how could Baltimore lose, especially if they had a couple games at home? So things looked really bad for Chuck and for the Pirates. But the rest of the story. They came back. They batted 323 in that series. I know that the pitchers had an earned run average of 3.34. The hitting was stupendous. The thing is, they were known as the Lumber and Lightning crew, but they didn't steal a single base in that series because Dempsey decided, we're going to throw nothing but fastballs. You can't steal as easily on a fastball. However, people like Parker and Stargell were fastball hitters, and they came back and they won.
I was going to mention that his managing style, they stole a lot of bases, but as you said, in that World Series, they didn't.
He had unusual, a couple people said to me, if I were you, I would have put more of his strategy in the book. But I thought I did put a lot of it. You know, he pretty much led the league 3 years in a row with most stolen bases by a team. Mm-hmm. That was one strategy. Another strategy is starters, he called openers, and they rarely lasted more than six innings. That was an exception.
Oh, that's the rule today.
And that was a Chuck Tanner rule. And a lot of people disagreed with him. He had a wonderful relieving. He had three terrific relievers.
Yes. I was going to say, back then they had a 10-man pitching staff. He had five starters. You said go five, six innings. But the relief pitching and the anchor there was Kenta Colvey, who was – he was just – look, you can see, you can tell by my room I'm a Met fan, but Kenta Colvey was like the premier relief pitcher in the National League then.
Yeah, and he appeared in 94 games. And then Grant Jackson appeared like in, I don't remember the exact amount. I looked it up the other day, but I think it was 73. And then Romo appeared in like 70 games. So you have these three relievers pitching all the time.
Right.
And by the way, Kent was probably the most fun guy to interview of all my interviews.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, I'm trying to get in touch with Kenta Colvey. I would love to interview him. But he's the sidearmer, and he was just so much fun to watch. And the difference is he went more than one inning. I mean, they pitched 2-3 innings when they had to.
Oh, yeah, and, yeah. He had wonderful stories. And I don't know, he and Chuck had kind of this repartee where they'd give each other the business. I don't know whether can I tell a Kent Colvey story?
Please.
No, well, sorry, no Kent Colvey. Yes, you may tell. Yes,
Kent was pitching out in San Francisco as a reliever. They decided, Chuck pulled him out and decided to bring in, I think he brought in Romo or Grant Jackson. I can't remember which it was. Kent handed the ball to Chuck and started to leave. And Chuck said, "No, you're going out into left field." Kent said, "Well, is that what you really want me to do?" He says, "Yeah." So he goes out to left field. Moreno, who spoke pidgin English, kept trying to tell him where to play and how the wind was going. And he threw grass in the air to show him where the wind was and where to stand. attentive. I couldn't understand a word he said. I didn't know what he was doing. But anyhow, they threw a pitch, which Chuck said, I want you to throw this outside. The reliever said, but if they hit it, they're going to hit it to left field. Chuck said, just try it. And he did. And the guy hit it to left field. And Tecovy caught the ball. And he said, you know, I really thought of dropping it so I could come back in and get the save against the next guy. He said, but I caught it. It was an easy, easy catch. But he told the story. And I thought it was very good. And that Tanner's unusual management strategy. And he pulled some funny stories like that.
Tanner was a great evaluator of talent. I mean, he actually is the reason that Goose Gossage is known as a great reliever, because he was a starter and he converted him to a relief pitcher.
That's correct.
Yeah.
He was, I think he won 18 games the year before in the minors. And to take a guy like that and make him a reliever, and he did something else. Wilbur Wood was a reliever.
Right. Made him a starter.
He made him a starter, and Wilbur Wood won 24 games in 1972, and he won 20 games in 71, probably 3 and 4.
Yeah. So he had a terrific run in Pittsburgh. Unfortunately, there was a time there where we're going to get into, you know, the drug scandals in the late 70s. I think it was about 77, 78, something like that. And Dale Bearer was involved and some of the Pirates as well.
Willie
Mays Aikens. Yeah.
I mean, some really good players. Chuck claimed he really didn't know. I think he knew a little bit was going on, but I don't think he had any idea the extent of what was going on. And Kent said the same thing. He said, I had no idea that this was going on, but it was. And the team had aged out. And so, I mean, new owners came in. And as Chuck said, I would have fired me too. So at the end of the year, they fired him.
Yeah.
And then he got a 3-year contract with Atlanta at $1 million a year. So that he didn't feel too bad.
Yeah. Atlanta was, that was when Ted Turner on the
Ted
team.
Ted Turner, yeah.
Yes. And he had no fond memories of Cox, who kind of eased him out. And that ended his career as a manager, although he spent many years as a scout and an executive with the Pirates in the tail end of his life.
One of the things from the book that I wanted to mention, just showing you his disposition, there was a dinner held in his honor, and you have in here, Tanner joked after the dinner, people made fun of my optimistic outlook. They said that if I were the captain of the Titanic, I would tell my passengers we were stopping for ice.
Yeah.
I mean, he
had a good sense of humor.
Yeah, he did. And he really he was, as we said, a player's manager. After the 75 Braves, he went into horse racing.
Yes. Matter of fact, he had one horse that qualified for the Kentucky Derby. And unfortunately, the horse got injured. And he really never earned money on his horses. Yeah. Although the one horse I know he mentioned it in the book probably won about $300,000 in races. He won I think he was in the money like 8 or 9 times. Yeah. But Chuck liked it, and then he went into a restaurant.
Right, but he wanted to be his goal was to, before we get to the restaurant, his goal was to be only person who had ever won a World Series managing and who had a Kentucky Derby winner. So that was.
And by the way, it just as a little aside, Hank Allen, my understanding, was the first modern day African American trainer for the Kentucky Derby.
That's something, a little tidbit there.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's correct.
So yeah, he went into the restaurant business, right? He had a restaurant with his name, Tanner's, which...
And it still exists, by the way.
Okay. And his favorite restaurant, though, in Newcastle was Valentine's.
Yes.
It seemed he lived there.
Until he owned his own restaurant.
Right.
they had a lot of fun down at Valentine's. And Chuck would talk to anyone. Anyone would be welcome to join him at his table. There are more Chuck Tanner baseballs in Newcastle than you can shake a leg at. Matter of fact, someone gave me one. I have a Chuck Tanner baseball. Signed baseball. It's not worth anything because he gave thousands.
There's so many of them.
I'll trade it if anyone has a Babe Ruth. I'll trade my Chuck Tanner and a hat.
What are you, Chuck Finley? At plus 100,000. And Manny Sanguian.
The book is called Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. We're talking to Dale Perlman, the author. It's the publisher, The History Press. You can get it there. You can get it on Amazon. Dale, before we let you go, I want to just say this. I noticed that Chuck Tanner managed continuously from 1970 through 1988. I mean, he had four jobs, but he never was out managing in those years. So that was a terrific run that he had. And I want you to talk about the way he treated people, because I read a lot in the book where, you know, oh, you want to come to a game, and he gave him great, great prime seats, and he's always welcoming. So talk about him and his relationship with just people in general.
I tell a story at the end of the book. And it's an interesting story. They have calling hours. And the calling hours are just about over. And a stranger comes into the room. And he said, I came from out of town. I had to come. He said, I had to tell you a story about Chuck. He said, I once was in a bar. And I was feeling very low. I didn't know whether I wanted to live or die. He said, things just had not gone my way. So I sat down at the bar and I had a beer. And the guy sitting beside me, I must have mentioned how life had been unfair to me. And he said, yeah, but there are always good things in life too. And for each bad thing that this man brought up, this stranger enumerated some positive, something kind of resonated with this man. And finally, he sat and listened and talked to the two strangers for almost an hour. And at the end of the talk, the man had realized, you know, there is hope in life. There is hope here. The guy introduced himself. He said, well, I'm Chuck. I'm glad we were able to talk. And he left. And another stranger came over and said, do you know who you were talking to? He said, yeah, some guy named Chuck. He said, that's Chuck Tanner. He was the manager of the Pirates. He was a major league ball player. He's a big guy. He said, I had to come to this calling hour and tell you that he saved my life. And that was the kind of guy Chuck was. I could talk about all the stories of the people that he helped out, whether he was in the minor leagues, whether he was the player or a manager. But I kind of thought that single story summarized what kind of guy Chuck was. And it just, as another side, Bruce said, when my mom was sick, I really found out what kind of guy my father was, because he didn't play golf anymore. He just took care of my mom.
The book is called, like I said, the Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Highly recommended, terrific book. He was a great manager, an even better person. Dale, we thank you for joining us on Baseball and BBQ, and please, much success with selling the book.
Jeff, I got to interrupt. 1 second. I'm sorry. Dale, should Chuck Tanner be in the Baseball Hall of Fame?
That's a good question, because he instituted strategies that were not commonly done. For instance, the relievers. He was a pinch hitter. most of his life. The use of pinch hitters, pinch runners like Alexander, who I would like to think he would, but it's very difficult for a manager who doesn't have better than a 500 record to get in. But I think in his case, he was such an exceptional man. I would like to see him in.
Sorry to interrupt, Jeff. You were doing a great job rapping. I got to encourage everyone, get this book, Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. Our guest is Dale Perlman. Dale, we appreciate you being with us. We hope that you will sell a ton of copies.
And I hope so.
Thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you. I enjoyed being with you guys very much.
Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Len. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
Thank you very much, Dale. Jeff, Chuck Tanner was just, he was a player's manager, right?
Yes. I would say so, yes.
Yeah. Seemed like a really great guy. Dale wrote a great book. We encourage everybody to pick it up. You know, if you didn't get what you want for the holiday season, there's two options. Get Dale Perlman's book, Chuck Tanner and the Pittsburgh Pirates. That's option one. And option two is go to baseballbbq.com. They have grilling tools and accessories. I can't believe that you don't have them already, but now's your chance. Go to baseballbbq.com. You want a spatula with a baseball bat handle? Jeff, do you want one?
I have one.
Oh, well, lucky you. Well, a lot of people don't, and they should go there.
Yes, absolutely. And it's just more, check out their website because a lot of great gifts, and treat yourself to something. And if you want to give us a call at 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave a comment on our Facebook page at Baseball and BBQ. Twitter, X, at Baseball and BBQ. Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate, review, follow, all that fun stuff. Subscribe.
Subscribe. Tell your friends. If you don't like the show, tell your not very good friends. We don't care. We just want downloads. We want you to listen. Thank you for listening.
Exactly. And now, what we've all been waiting for, a baseball rant.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. That was quality. All right. Look, here's my rant. Okay. No. Okay. For all of you out there, I'm no Jeff Cohen. Okay. I'm no old coot. I can't rant like him, but I'll tell you what. For years, you all know we're baseball fans, but it's no secret that we're Met fans. And for years, we had to live in the shadow of the New York Yankees. And they cast a beautiful shadow. You know, all those world championships, the great players, you know, Jeff's favorite Mariano and Derek Jeter, Eric Cheetah. Okay.
Number two in your program, number one in your heart, the iconic one with intrinsic value. I get it.
I use my rant, it includes you. All right, so whatever. And once in a blue moon, the Mets do something. You know, they win a World Series in 86. They 88, they don't get there. 2000, they're in World Series. They lose to the Yankees. Okay. 2015, World Series, they lose. But it's okay because we got something we always wanted. We got someone who's not only a multi-billionaire, but he's also a fan of the team that he purchased. And we now have our, can I say this, Jeff? He's our George Steinbrenner, right?
Ooh. Yes.
Right. Steve Cohen, he comes in, he loves the team, he wants to win. Okay, fine. He does it 1 year, he buys a lot of players, it doesn't work out, and that's fine. Okay, but we've got a billionaire owner. It's like incredible. So this year, you get Shohei Ohtani, maybe the greatest baseball player ever. That I know that's saying a lot, but there are people that will not argue that point. Some will, some won't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So look, only one team can get Ohtani. He went for $700 million. You slice it the way you want to, with Ohtani only getting $2 million a year. They're paying the money. The money gets paid. Whatever. Okay. But we weren't in, the Mets were not in on the Ohtani chase. We have a billionaire owner, but okay. The Mets did not see a place for a guy that can hit, that can pitch. No, we didn't want that. Why would we want someone like that on our team? The MVP, two out of the last 3 years unanimously. Why would we want that? Okay, whatever. But then a pitcher, perhaps, maybe all the rumors aren't true. Maybe he doesn't become who he's supposed to be and paid to be. But Yamamoto, another player that this one, Ohtani, I don't know that the Mets wanted, but Yamamoto, the Mets wanted. They went to Japan. Yes, absolutely. I give them full credit for doing whatever they could to get him here, except for one thing.
That
the Mets had to know around what the Dodgers were going to offer. Okay, blow him away. What is an additional $50 million, $75 million? You wanted the guy, get him. We have a billionaire owner. So now, the offseason, maybe we get something, but two shiny toys. And okay, skeptics could have said, well, not everybody can win. One went to one team, one went to the other team. They went to one team. One team got them. Could have been the Mets, but come on. I know. Not a Jeff rant, but I'm just saying, we finally got our billionaire owner. I want shiny new toys.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Len. But maybe the Mets did blow him away. They did offer him $325 million, which is the highest of any pitcher ever. And he took that offer and went to the Dodgers. He said the Dodgers matched it on yours. They did, and it's done. Mets never had a chance to up it at any point. And there's one thing that the Mets can't offer. That's geography. Living in Southern California with the weather all year round, no pitching in April or October in New York where it's cold. So besides, he even said at his press conference he would have chosen the Dodgers. The Mets were used. That's it. That's what's going to keep happening until the Mets start winning. But Len, I have a rant of my own.
Okay, and I want to get right to it. But I have to say, I bow to you. I am learning at the feet of the master. Wow. I rant, and your counter explanation, it puts my rant to shame.
Oh, stop.
You are the mad ranter. I bow to you.
Stop.
So with that in mind, here is Jeff with his baseball rant.
Thank you, Leonard. Now it's my turn to rant. You know, the Major League Baseball Competition Committee has approved rule changes for 2024. Would you like to know what they are? Instead of 20 seconds when a runner is on base, it will be an 18-second pitch clock with runners on. 2 seconds. Does that make a big difference? I don't know.
I'm going to get to leave the game 20 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait, maybe not.
4 mound visits instead of 5. I mean, really, is that really going to change? You know, come on. If a pitcher warms up before an inning, he must face at least one hitter. Now, this one I have a little problem with, because the pitcher goes out to the mound, warms up, and then the opposing team sends out a pinch hitter. Wait a second. As a manager, I want to make that opportunity to make that change. And you're telling me I have to wait, I have to face one hitter? I think that's a bad rule. And this one, the runner's lane to first base wide into the infield grass. Okay, who cares about that one? But that's not why I want to rant. I want to rant because I want to let you know, look, the Major League Competition, do you know who's on this Major League Competition Committee?
Tell us.
11 people. 11 people, and you have to have a majority to get the rule changes passed. So the Major League Competition Committee has 6 club representatives. John Stanton of the Mariners, Bill DeWitt of the Cardinals, Dick Monfort of the Rockies, Greg Johnson of the Giants, Mark Shapiro of the Blue Jays, and Tom Warner of the Red Sox. That's 6. You have 4 members of the players: Tyler Glasnow, Jack Flaherty, Whit Merrifield, and Orson Slater, and umpire Bill Miller. Well, when the competition committee is stacked, what good is the players having on there? Yeah, big deal. It wasn't a unanimous vote. Guess what? It was 6-5. Gee, I wonder where all this came from. I got a statement here from the executive director of Players Association, Tony Clark. I'm going to read it. This was obviously when the rule changes went in effect. This afternoon, player representatives voted against the 2024 rule changes proposed by the commissioner's office. As they made clear in the competition committee, players strongly felt that following last season's profound changes to the fundamental rules of the game, immediate additional changes are unnecessary and offer no meaningful benefits to fans, players, or the competition on the field. This season should be used to gather additional data and fully examine the health, safety, and injury impacts of reduced recovery time. That is where our focus will be. You know what? I kind of agree with him. I mean, pitchers have to go now a little faster now, and especially when runners on base. Who knows how effective that will hurt their arms or whatever. I kind of agree with him. But you know what? When you have 6 guys on the competition committee, that's from the owners, what difference does it make? They'll do whatever they want. What, it's a bogus committee. It's ridiculous. That's my rant.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Jeff. That was terrific. I don't have anything else to say to that. Well, you have something else to offer. And then right afterwards, we'll get to Raymond Blazek.
It's time for the Baseball Quote of the Week.
All right, you guys, let's listen up. We won a game yesterday. We win one today, that's 2 in a row. We win one tomorrow, that's called a winning streak. It has happened before.
From the movie Major League 2, and that was Lou Brown acting, who was portrayed by Tom Gannon, I think his name was. But it was a great line, and I thought it was pretty funny.
An audio quote of the week. Perfect. Thank you, Jeff. And now let's get right to Raymond Blazek. There's no better way to spend a Saturday morning than with our next guest. He has a social media presence. Jeff reached out to him. I'm glad he did. Been looking around. The pictures of his food look incredible. His cookers, he's got recipes. He might be an up-and-comer in the barbecue industry, or maybe he's been doing it a while. We're going to find out. So we want to welcome Raymond Blazek to Baseball and Barbecue. Welcome, Raymond. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome, Ray.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be here.
I got to call him Ray. We're calling him Ray, not Raymond.
Yeah, barbecue Ray is fine. It's good.
All right.
All right, barbecue Ray. Ray, you know, looking around your socials and, you know, it seems, I mean, looking fantastic. So I want to ask you, how did you, you're a young guy compared to us old fogies. what got you interested in being a barbecue maven?
You know, to start off, backyard barbecue was always like my my hobby. I started off doing some stir fry on a flat top, and I ventured off to learning how to fire management and using the smokers, for example, charcoal and wood. And so I got more into barbecue, you know, more into detail barbecue, to learn how to do more fire management, learn how to do cooks, and, you know, and just be more on that end. Then as I progressed more, I got to be better at it. I started getting more into, you know, different cookers, for example. Mm-hmm. I started off going with kettles. I learned they're real fun to use, you know, being able just to, you know, sear some steaks, learn how to do that, learn how to cook, you know, barbecue on that aspect, learn how to use a flat top and Kamados. And so I put my hands on everything pretty much. And I kind of learned, I kind of got a feel for each grill, kind of learned how to master them a little bit. But we all make mistakes, but we learn as we go. So, you know, that's where I'm at right now.
You're learning as you go. So, Ray, you're making mistakes, but you're learning as you're going. Well, let's.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's take a step back. When you were a kid, what was the form of barbecue in your house?
We did a lot of pulled porks. We did a lot of spatchcock chicken and brisket, for example.
Okay.
So you know, everything was more detailed. Like I said, we were more of open fire type. You know, be outside in the backyard, have the logs burning, being able to, you know, sear a steak right on a grate right there. So that's where it all started.
All right. So you were exposed to the real type of barbecue when you were a kid, yeah. Right? So then you grew up with it.
And yeah, and to be honest, you know, I have a lot of people around me that are real into it, just like me. So, you know, we kind of share our thoughts and we share our cooks, what to do, what not to do. The mistake I made, I learned from him. We learn from each other. And these are helpful tips that I've learned, and I've learned to master. I wouldn't say I'm a pit master, not yet, but there will be a time that I would probably be there. It's just, you know, takes time.
Okay, exactly. So, you know, that word pit master is a term that's kind of thrown around loosely, right? You know, we call, there's certain people that are just obvious, you know, Tuffy Stone, we call him a pit master, you know, Myron Mixon, he's a pit master, right? Now, Jeff and I are backyard cooks. You know, we have our smokers, we confess, we have a gas grill, you know, we have our pit barrel and our Webers and our Traegers and, you know, stuff, right? And fortunately, when people come over, they say, oh, I really, these are the best ribs I've ever had. I'm sure you've had that many times.
Yep.
But when will you feel that you have become that pit master?
That's a great question. I've been invited to go out to Texas many times, grill with one of the best, you know, Blazing Star and all those guys. So I know you've interviewed them, and there was times where, you know, I've seen a lot of barbecue, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of competition out there. Again, there's no competing myself to, you know, other pit masters or backyard barbecuers or anything like that. But we all learn from each other. So, you know, there's a lot of different methods when it comes to it. There's a lot of different flavors and things to do. In my heart, I feel that I've mastered my backyard, but when it comes to being around a crowd and you're around hundreds of people, it can get a little difficult, you know? So, you know, you gotta take the gift, give it, and hopefully the people enjoy your food. You know, I mean, that's one of the things I like to do, so.
It's a gift. He said it. Take the gift, right? When you're cooking, there are times that I'll be cooking and Jeff will be cooking, and I'm more concerned. I don't really need to have the food. I mean, I'll eat it, and I love it, but I'm more for what the other people think. And I don't know if that's the same way with all cooking, but I know in barbecue, I just want everybody to be happy. You know, I want people to take that first bite, it's not a contest, but I want them to be happy. So I get that. That's a great thing. Now, what's your primary cooker? What is, if I said to you right now, you know, what's your best cooker, or what do you like to cook on the most?
Another great topic. Let's start off with this. I would probably say the Kamado. I know, like, there's a big name brands out there, like Big Green Egg. I have Big Green Egg. Primo, for example. However, I wind up getting the Kamado from New Age, and this thing is awesome. I've done cooks on many, many different Kamados. Like I said, the Egg, the Primo, the New Age. And I would have to say that the best results I've had was on the New Age, simply because of the design of the Kamado is taller on the dome side. So you can actually hang ribs in it if you want, instead of laying flat or using a rib rack. It's just amazing results. I've had results differently, all different ways, and phenomenal. It's just nice, slow. They just come out real perfect, tender, moist, the way they should be. I mean, if you want to fall off the bone, I mean, you could do it either way. But yeah, I would have to go with the New Age for sure.
You know, looking at your socials, I did notice that you have, you know, several different smokes, several different cookers out there. One, I noticed that one that you use is a stainless steel drum smoker. I haven't seen that one, you know, used very much. So how do you like that one?
Okay, that one I actually made. That's you made that one. Gallon.
That's why you haven't seen it, Jeff. You made it.
So I don't know if you guys are familiar with like Hunsaker, Drum Smokers, Gateway and all that.
Right.
They're very big brands. I have Hunsaker, I've had Gateway, but I intend to lean more towards the stainless simply because, one, it don't rust. It's easy to clean. It's easy to maintain. I can do hot and fast, or I can do low and slow on the drum. This thing is an amazing cooker. I built it myself. Actually, majority of the parts are from Hunsaker that I've used to build it. So I reached out to them directly, got all the parts I needed, fabricated it, built it, threw it in my pit. And this thing is an amazing cooker. I mean, if you want crispy wings, you want anything, I call this the chicken machine, just simply because it's a chicken machine. This thing literally can do wings, you know, spatchcock. You can do whatever you want on it. I mean, besides chicken, but it just comes out so good. It's like, imagine deep frying wings in oil on a deep fryer, but putting it on that drum smoker, it's 100 times better. It's unbelievable, the flavor you get and the crisp you get from it. It's unbelievable. Thighs, whatever you want. It's amazing. So yes, that is another one of my favorites. And I will never let that go because that is an awesome cooker.
You also have a Camp Chef that I've noticed. Is that a gas grill or is that used charcoal?
So I've had, again, Camp Chefs, I probably had about four different styles already. I had the Apex, which was the pellet and gasser combination. I just recently got the Woodwind Pro, which you're able to actually use actual wood with the pellet. So that enhances your flavor for your cooks, which I'm using now. I got rid of the Apex. It was kind of big. It was taking up a lot of room in my backyard. So I'm kind of like, you know, with my space, I'm dedicated to having certain cookers that I'm dedicated to. And then over there, I'll have, you know, my other cookers that I was like, I kind of go to them. But yeah, Camp Chef is an amazing company. Their cookers are very good. Their pellet grills, they're highly recommended. I know there's a lot of competition out there when it comes to pellet grills, like Traeger and
Rectech,
you know, Pitboss, Rectech. Yeah. Rectech's a huge, another big one. And there's just a lot of competition.
Sure.
But to me, it's the concept is the same. I mean, if I throw a chuck roast on a Camp Chef and I throw one on the Traeger and I throw another one on the, you know, the Pit Boss or, you know, the Rectech, you may get different results from each cooker because each cooker is unique. But all in all, you probably wouldn't even know the difference.
You know, Ray, I'm very impressed with the fact that you built your own cooker. I thought it was a big accomplishment when I put my Traeger together and only had a few parts left over, which they're extras, I guess. They send you extra parts. I don't know. Although mine does lean a little, but whatever. So But the fact that you built your own cooker is very impressive. And it makes me think of, we actually had a guest, and by the, when your episode's released, this will already be out. I don't know if you've heard of Willingham's, but John Willingham, who's in the, he's since passed away, but he's in the Barbecue Hall of Fame. He built this thing you'd be interested in. It's called the Wham Turbo Cooker. It's unbelievable. The meat hangs, but it rotates.
Okay.
And they hang racks of ribs. They hang whole hogs. You might want to check it out if you go to Willingham's. I just thought you'd be interested because somebody who builds their own cooker like that, it probably is someone that would be interested. Now, you mentioned ribs. Everyone loves ribs. That's
absolutely
right. The issue that I always have when I'm going to make ribs is, do I hang them or do I lay them flat? And I never know. You know, it depends on the mood. Do you find that when you hang the ribs or lay them flat, you get they cook differently? Which do you like better? Take us through your process.
All right. So it all depends, right? If you want to go like with St. Louis or you want to go with baby backs. I was taught many different ways, and I've tasted many different styles of cooking ribs. And one of the things that I've learned is, when it comes to St. Louis ribs and baby backs, I will wrap baby backs. I will not wrap St. Louis ribs. So that is the trick. So if you want to stick to like the 3-2-1 method everybody knows about when it comes to barbecue, it's the easiest method to follow. I'd recommend it. But for St. Louis ribs, it's probably my number one choice just because it's way, way flavorful. It's better. It's, you know, you get more meat to the bone. But I will not wrap them. I will probably put them in a rib rack, have them sideways, vertical, just let them cook low and slow, and then just take it from there. Now, there's other options. You can do a dry rubbed, or you can do sauced. Preferably, I've had it both ways. A lot of people, if I'm serving it, I will serve it dry rubbed, and they'll have a dipping sauce for it. But if you want that sweet, savory kind of kick to it, then I would just probably just mop it on and sauce it from there, and then you'll just be mind blown from the results. I mean, either way, it's amazing. Baby backs, you want to wrap them because the bone they'll just kind of fall off the bone. So those I definitely recommend.
Ray, foil or butcher paper? Put me on the spot.
Your own preference. Everybody has their own preference.
What's your preference?
My preference is the peach butcher paper.
The butcher paper. Okay. Yeah. And why? Why is that, Ray?
Because it just holds, to me, it holds the temps real nice. It keeps all the juice and flavor inside, and it enhances it better. It evens the cook on it. It keeps it nice and moist like it's supposed to. Foil kind of dries out a little bit, I noticed.
Okay. That's interesting.
You know, it's good, but it just kind of dries out more for some reason. One another, it's hard to explain on the chemistry part of it, but it does dry it out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Ray, I noticed with all your cookers and all your equipment you have there, I'm wondering if do you do any catering that you have so many that you can just feed a bunch of people?
Well, I could definitely cater. I could cater for a couple hundred. But I thought about it. I have a good friend. We thought about doing this. We thought about, you know, smoking, you know, some pork butts and doing pulled pork and doing all this, you know, ribs and brisket. But the time, you know, we work day jobs. So that would have to be something you would have to be dedicated to 100%.
Sure.
To do. And, you know, believe me, I would love to do that. I mean, if I can quit my day job, cooker, man, I've got to pay the bill. So.
Sure. And also, looking at your socials, I noticed that you add music to it, and it seems like it's, let's just say it focuses to the younger generation, not my generation. But are you trying to get younger people to get into barbecue?
You know, the music part, I kind of filter out a little bit. I've been trying different methods when it comes to, you know, either talking or adding music to my content. The generation I'm with is an older generation compared to the younger generation, but it's good to see the younger generation wanting to be engaged in it and learn how to cook and barbecue and come out with their endeavors and take that on, because I think that's phenomenal. If that motivates people, you know, I'm all for it. You know, I like people to be engaged. I find that that's something very important, to where I can social with people. Mm-hmm. You know, they ask me questions and I give them my feedback, and then they try it and they come back and they say, hey, that was amazing. But the younger crowd's there, the older crowd's there. It's just, it's a hit or miss in between. And if you're for it, I'll work with you.
All right. So, Ray, I'm looking at your Instagram and mm-hmm. I see this should not be allowed to be seen before somebody has eaten for the day, because it's I would like to eat a lot of these things. But let's talk about, you've got Barbecue Ray barbecue rub. You have your own rub?
I did. Yeah. So when I first started, I have an LLC. I have Barbecue Ray's, an actual company, and I manufactured my SPG, and it was real great. But then COVID hit, and then everything kind of took a plunge from right. there. The sales dropped. The sales were really, really good in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Again, I was with a lot of high-end content creators from like TikTok, and you know, I was engaged with them, and I had a lot of helpful tips that kind of helped me, you know, get started. It's something that I want to continue to do, but then when COVID hit, it kind of just backfired a little bit. But my goal is to continue this, and I want to get it rebranded again and get it back out, because okay. it's amazing.
It's not easy, you know? Though. It isn't.
No, it's not.
We have it's a not. Lot of, you mentioned Blazing Star. Yeah. He's got some phenomenal products.
Yep.
We have our friend Ray Sheehan had his sauces and rubs, and which were very successful, but he'll talk all the time about how difficult it is to be a one man company who has to deliver and come up with new things and all that. But
I've noticed on his Instagram, on his socials, that he used BT Lee's sauces and rubs, who also was a prior guest, and those are very good as well.
Yeah.
Oh, BT Lee's sauces are amazing. They're crazy names, don't get me wrong. Names I would never imagine, but how they come up with these ideas is something great. But his sauces are really, really good. You know, Blazing Star sauces and rubs are very, very good. I always reach out to Mike. I talk to him on Twitter and X now, and TikTok, and you know, I here and there. But yeah, their rubs are amazing, and I use them to this day. They're highly recommended. They're phenomenal. They just, the flavor profiles you get are really good.
Yeah. Is it Mike? Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So he's got a couple of rubs that extremely flavorful. And if people like hot, he's got one called Reaper and one called Scorpion.
Oh, the Reaper, yeah.
They are hot. But all right, back to you. So I'm looking at your Instagram and I see Royal Oak Lump Charcoal. In barbecue, you've got, you know, there are some debates, right?
Yeah.
Do I hang? Do I lay flat? Do I wrap? Do I not wrap? Do I use butcher paper? Do I use foil? Do I do a dry rub, serve it with the sauce, or do I sauce it before? I mean, on and on and on. And everyone has an opinion. And one of the things is lump charcoal versus regular charcoal. So, and it's not so easy, because lump can be used for maybe making chicken, because maybe you need a higher temperature. Lump seems to burn hotter and shorter. But what's your preference? Because I do see the lump charcoal.
Definitely, I prefer. I always use lump, right? I don't use briquettes, really.
Okay.
Like I said, pretty much in like when you're cooking in a Kamado or an egg, or you know, even my drum, my stainless drum is it's lump only. Like you said, you want that hot and fast. You want that. It gives you the good profile for the flavor that you get from the charcoal. And I use B&B. I use a lot more of the competition lump, just because it burns hotter, it's cleaner. You know, I don't want to cook and see black smoke coming out of my cooker. You know, I don't want to see any smoke. So, you know, I'm very picky when it comes to charcoal. Mm-hmm. When I first started barbecuing, I used Royal Oak. I was adventuring a little bit to see who, you know, what was good, what was not good. You know, but again, everybody has their preference. But personally, for me, I use Belarus. It's like a Ukrainian lump.
Okay.
It's really good. It's clean, blue smoke, clear smoke. I mean, sometimes you don't even see anything. And it's phenomenal. B&B, Lumberjack is really good. Lumberjack is probably one of my favorites. It's expensive, but it's really, really good. And if you're in competition and you want good lump, yeah, B&B, Lumberjack, they're probably one of the top choices to go with.
So I change off between, I have a bag of lump in the garage and also regular charcoal, but I loved Stubbs. There was Stubbs charcoal, and then they went goodbye. And some other company had acquired them or something. I don't know. And then I actually was using Weber. Weber briquettes were very good, mm-hmm. but then I couldn't find them anymore. So I hate it when you get attached to a brand and then the next thing you know, it's gone.
Yeah. Briquettes are good. I like to use briquettes on the kettle, for example, because briquettes, you can do longer cooks. Just keep in mind, you know, you want short, hot, fast. If you're going to do like a rotisserie or something on like a Weber kettle, or, you know, I would lean more towards the briquettes. Just, you know, it's a longer cook. So that's right. What you want.
And Ray, you mentioned competition. Do you compete?
Mm-hmm. No. I thought about it and my buddy, but, you know, I'd rather just go there and enjoy and kind of, right. you know, have fun and eat like everybody else, man. But, you know, I'm more backyard. I'm more, you know, presentation and kind of just learning more as I go and becoming better at it. Getting tips from, you know, people all over. And, you know, they say, hey, try this, do this, do this. So every little bit helps.
Well, I gotta say, your presentation is great. And looking on your Twitter, and the other day you put on you asked a question, what's a good side for beef short ribs? So I'm gonna ask you, what's a good side for beef short ribs?
So my side, I went with mashed potatoes. That was my side.
Ooh, that's not bad.
Yeah. The beef short ribs came out amazing. The trick to this is the beef tallow. It's one of the most common things, you know, people don't use. I want the beef ribs to be moist. I want them to pretty much fall off that bone. I do the celery. I'll do, you know, the onion. I'll do some cooking wine, and I'll do the beef broth, some tallow in there, man. And oof, so good. So good. So good. Nice, low and slow. That's the trick. Low and slow.
Ray, let me test your dedication. So you're in New Jersey, right?
Yep.
Okay. Let's say it's February 1st. You're in the mood for ribs, but mm-hmm. there was 3 feet of snow the night before, and your cooker is about 6 feet away, and you have a lot of snow to shovel. Are you doing it?
Absolutely.
There's dedication.
My path is always clear to my cookers. That's mandatory. That's every day. So I'm outside every day. It's hard, you know, speaking of this, it's hard to choose which one I'm actually going to use, because that's the hardest part, because I don't know which one, because they're all great.
Right.
So
yes, that does get hard. Yeah. But I want to, Jeff, let me ask you, there's 3 feet of snow. Same example. What are you doing?
It depends. 3 feet of snow, that's going to be tough to shovel that. But
you might be calling Ray and say, hey, Ray.
Yeah, exactly.
Since you're cooking anyway, let's go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Send me some.
That's it. It's very, I love it when it snows. When it snows outside, I'm outside cooking. It's just so beautiful. It's relaxing. It's very nice.
And you know, it's beautiful on your website, which it's called itsbbqray.com. The first picture under the about section is Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue wings. And that is a thing of beauty. I mean, that looks so, I just want to eat them up right now. It just looks so great.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Sweet baby Ray's makes phenomenal barbecue sauce, and it's the most common barbecue sauce you'll find anywhere. I mean, wherever you shop, you know, ShopRite or Wegmans or, you know, wherever you go. Yeah. For that savory sweetness right there, Sweet Baby Ray's is the go-to.
Wait, I thought we're talking a Sweet Baby Ray's. Right.
No, but Sweet Baby Ray's, they make some good sauce. Really good.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We had Dave Raymond on and, you know, the former owner of, and the founder of, Sweet Baby Ray's, and as a selfless plug, but if you haven't heard that episode, I really suggest you listen, and anyone listening to this, what a guy. It's amazing how they came up with that sauce and just basically world domination.
Yep. It's amazing how something like that can take off. I mean, you know, that's a dream for many of the, you know, the people in the business today. You know, they're putting their dedication and hard work into it, and hopefully it goes, it takes off.
So Ray, what about, you know, I can guarantee I'm without even asking, I'm sure that you watch the barbecue shows, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like Pitmaster and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. But how about becoming a contestant on one of them?
That's something I would do. I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah. Have you ever, but you haven't sent in audition tapes or anything yet?
No, not yet. Again, I feel confident in myself. I believe, I believe that my cooks are really, really good, but competition out there is just, it's tough.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
I'm sure you've seen a lot of these events that happen out like Tennessee and Memphis and Arizona and, you know, Las Vegas. There's just these huge events, these barbecue events where you see people from all over the world come together, and it's tough, you know?
Oh yeah.
So I give those barbecue guys who compete, I give them a lot of credit because, you know, it's hard work.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of dedication.
Yeah. That's why we talk about it.
And listen, it doesn't look as easy. It's not as easy as it looks. It's definitely hard work.
Right.
Definitely. But if anybody wants any questions, they can just, you know, go on your Instagram and message you, and you'd be very happy to help them, like as you said earlier.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, Instagram right now is another social media I'm still learning. The algorithm for Instagram is a little more difficult than Twitter, X now. I keep saying Twitter, but X.
We all do. We all do.
You would tweet. How do you X?
I get it. And it's still tweet, right? That's the
right. Whole exactly.
You're still tweeting.
Right.
But, you know, for all the people that I engage with on X now is really phenomenal. I wish that I can get this on Instagram. I'm trying to, but it's really, really hard to engage, you know, to get more followers, for example, and reach out with people with comments and expressions. So I've learned to master this on X. I don't know if you see, I'm at 500,000 views.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
it's crazy. I mean,
I'm looking at it. You have some great engagement. I mean, you have thousands of people are commenting, and that's fantastic.
Yep. You know, I get 200,000, you know, views on one post. I mean, 500,000. I mean, you know, for example, because people love it. I don't know why. So if I do a good cook or I do a mistake, I'm not, I'm going to say, hey, look, I messed up, you know, and that just, the people come out and they just express more about it. So I'm not afraid to post this content because I feel that, you know, it's still good. even your worst mistakes are still good.
Well, I don't know, Ray, I've often told one of my worst mistakes was the ribs hanging and falling into the fire.
Oh,
that might
bad.
Not
that's
have still
bad.
Been good.
Yeah, no, that's bad.
Right.
That's definitely bad. But, you know, as far as like, if you want to hang ribs on a Kamado or like that drum smoker I have, that 55 gallon, they're perfect for hanging ribs. You know, you can get the grate and just get the hooks and just hang them right along and just go to town. I do recommend having the diffuser in the drum. So it's very important. So all the drippings will hit the diffuser. So you don't get all that flare up. on your cook is very important. A lot of people just throw a fire basket in there, put their lump and light it. Mm-hmm. And it's not good because you get all that flare. So definitely a diffuser on the firebox and you're good to go. It'll keep it contained and it keeps it. It's like a vortex that just goes in one big circle from airflow in, comes right out the exhaust. Oh, wow. Very good.
Okay. That's great advice. Check out.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, Ray, we thank you for joining us today. And if you want to plug any of your social media, please, this is the time.
Plug away.
Let other people know where to get Ray Blazek.
Again, you find me pretty much everywhere. I'm X, Instagram, TikTok, so all the above. And just if you have any comments, questions, concerns, anything about barbecue at all, feel free to reach out to me, man. I express my cooks and, you know, we can learn a thing or two.
It's BBQ Ray. So yeah, that's on all your socials. So thank you, Ray. We really appreciate it. And you know, best of luck and you know, absolutely, continue cooking.
Thank you. Appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Ray. It's been a lot of fun.
Yep.
Absolutely. Good, gentlemen. Take care.
And thank you very much, Raymond, for joining us on Baseball and BBQ. Check out his Twitter. It has lots of great pictures on there. And he is all the way from the great state of New Jersey. Len, he's from Jersey.
Yeah. Yes, he is. Yes. And it just shows you the East Coast barbecue. We're taking over.
Yes.
And, but yeah, no, he is. It's sort of like getting players on the show that are in the low minors. Not that he's in the low minors, but you know what I mean? They're on their way up. You try to get them after they're in the Hall of Fame. It's tougher.
Yeah, Ray, and Raymond is on his way up. Absolutely.
Way up. So glad we got him on his way up because, you know, no, I'm sure he'll always come on the show. Raymond, thank you very much. Jeff, two rants, two great guests, an audio quote of the week. I have to say, other than we are brought to you by Bet Online, it is where the game starts. We're not starting, we're ending.
Len, do we want to give a little preview of what's next week?
Yeah. I mean, a tease? Are we calling it a tease?
Well, we've done this last couple of years. The Hall of Fame announcement will be made on January 23rd, but we have our own Baseball and BBQ Hall of Fame show, which will be next week, episode number 219, dropping on January 6th, 2024. Not to be missed. Tell your friends, and Len, now we can end.
Yeah, looking forward to that Hall of Fame special. We have two special guests who will make their picks for the Hall of Fame. And you know, Jeff, we're very influential and smart. I'm sure whoever we choose will get in, and who those we choose not to get in won't. So that is us. But all right, we're going to end with the poet. That is Shel Kurkovsky. And Dave Dresser, he is the musician. And Jeff, the song?
Baseball always brings you home. And we will see you next week on episode number 219.